Jerry Bader Show, 10:35. Again, this is for the Green Bay area. Eastern Wisconsin, there's probably going to hit all over the state. Listen to the station or go to the website of the station you're listening to in Wausau, Sheboygan. Berlin closing at noon. No evening activities. De Pere closing at 12:45. All schools closing 2 hours early. Green Bay releasing 2 hours early. No PM 4K. I assume that's high school. And EC, all activities canceled. Omro closing at 1 p.m. No evening activities. Pulaski closing 2 hours early. No evening activities. West De Pere closing 2 hours early. No PM 4K. No evening activities. Be listening. Storms hitting most of the state because this is the winter from hell that will not end. It just is. All right. Talking about the disparity in the way both the media and the black community have handled the Michael Dunn and George Zimmerman cases. Jeff in Appleton. Jeff, go ahead.
Good morning, Jerry. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got my idea on, or my take on the reason why the media isn't running with the Dunn case the way they ran with the Zimmerman case, that the media and the rabble-rousers that ran with the case that spearhead that stuff aren't nearly as interested in the facts of the case as they are with the sensational angle of it. Now, it's, I believe that because of what we've seen in movies and on TV, that you take the image of a car full of, I believe there were four black teenagers in the car and the one white guy outside the car, that's harder to paint as a victim, as harder to tug on your heartstrings than if you take Trayvon, a teenager, young teenager, walking home from the store with Skittles in his hand and he was followed by a guy. I think you can, if you paint it with the sensationalism brush, it's harder to get the picture that they want. Now, that's not to say they're not going to try that, given this, you know, a little bit more time after the verdict. Maybe they'll get their wheels and their gears and gears moving and try to do that with the Dunn case. That's just my angle on that.
I agree completely with you. Here's the one thing you left out, but you got it all right. That he was a poor black kid in the wrong place at the wrong time. That mm-hmm. gated community,
right,
Jeff. That he was where white folks, and that's before they knew George Zimmerman was Hispanic. The white folks don't want him there. And in this case, the family didn't successfully put up an outdated picture of Trayvon
right.
Martin that picture this innocent little boy. That's exactly right. Thanks a lot for the call. That's what I think. That, in fact, it does. A lot of the media, even though they consider themselves open-minded, tolerant liberals, if there's a bunch of boisterous blacks, even they are uncomfortable. The setting was different. It wasn't the same. Secondly, the timing. The Martin Zimmerman case, the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, had sucked up all the oxygen by the time this one started working its way through. And as you know, the media can only pay attention to one thing at a time. John in Stevens Point. John, go ahead.
Morning, Jerry. I was agreeing with you, too. I think there's one more template that we're missing on the whole subject.
Yeah.
And that is, if you look at, like, Al Sharpton's history, he tends to go after a certain profile of individuals in his attacks. His first notoriety to fame was going after the law enforcement in New York.
Tawana Brawley.
Yep. In Carolina, when he went after the lacrosse players, he was going after wealth and privilege. In Florida, again, Zimmerman fits power of authority, uniform, skinhead almost.
That's what they...
That he likes.
That's what they try. Actually, you know what? I did miss that one, John. You're exactly right. That as they, whatever title they had, Community Watch, that there was that position of authority, but you kept hearing that phrase, gated community, like it was a place where blacks aren't welcome. I think that was really the big thing. Speaking of, and we're moving along now, speaking of not being welcome, there is a major story from last week that is being reported, and I'm not saying it's being underreported, but its impact is being underreported. That is the vote in Tennessee at a VW plant in Chattanooga, voting down the United Auto Workers Union in that plant. This is a stunning, stinging defeat for unions in general and the UAW in particular. They're trying to spin it one way, but the reality says it's a much bigger defeat than you might imagine. Here's what they're trying to say. Well, you know, you had, we were facing the anti-labor movement, and the cards were stacked against us. Republican Senator Bob Corker, other Tennessee Republicans and conservative lobbyists, they all campaigned against this, and we didn't have a chance. That is absolute crap. And understand what the stakes were here and why this is such a big loss. This was seen as one that they could win. They are trying desperately to unionize the auto industry in the South, the new American auto industry. Foreign-owned plants in southern states and cities that are non-union. Boy, they thought if they could get the VW plant in Chattanooga, this would be that first flag in the ground, and then they would continue their march through the South. That's what makes this defeat so stunning. Here's what makes it even more stunning, and the part that they're just out and out lying about, that the cards were stacked against them. Allow me to read to you from today's Wall Street Journal, at least online. There is no print edition of the Wall Street Journal on President's Day, but here's the online. The decision by workers at the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, to reject the United Auto Workers is the best news so far this year for the American economy. Even with Volkswagen management on its side, let me say that again. Even with Volkswagen management on its side, the union that combined with CEOs to nearly ruin U.S. car makers couldn't persuade a majority voting in a secret ballot to let it become their agent to bargain with the foreign-owned company. This wasn't merely one more failed union organizing attempt. The UAW and its chief, Bob King, spent years working toward this vote as part of its strategy to organize plants in the American South, and all the stars were aligned in its favor. Before we get into that, just understand this. They're trying to say the cards are stacked against them. That's just a lie. All of the cards were aligned in its favor. Mr. King colluded with IG Metall, Volkswagen's German union, to neutralize Volkswagen management. It pitched the collaborative vision of a labor management works council at the plant that makes the VW Passat, and it claimed to have learned its lesson from the confrontation and strikes that hurt Detroit's automakers. Volkswagen management gave the union the run of the plant to lobby workers while denying similar privileges to union opponents. Management in Chattanooga was on board with this. Yeah, we can work together. We can be collaborative. They gave them every break in the world to get this passed. So it's nothing short of remarkable that the union couldn't make the sale. The failure reflects how well the plant's workers are doing without a union, to the tune of $27 an hour, including benefits. The defeat also speaks to the harm the UAW has done to itself by driving GM and Chrysler to bankruptcy and pushing companies like Caterpillar to move new production from union plants. These columns have long argued that a company organized by a union usually deserves what it gets, but most workers understand that the modern union offer is often a Faustian bargain. The UAW may be able to negotiate a near-term increase in pay and job security for current workers, but the price, in addition to steep coerced dues, is usually a less competitive company that means less security and fewer jobs in the long run. The best proof is the UAW itself. Almost 75% of its members in 35 years, as its demands and work rules made their employees less competitive. It has lost 75% of its members in 35 years. As its demands and work rules made their employers less competitive. That long run might have come soon For Volkswagen's Chattanooga workers, they know the company may decide as early as this month where to build a new SUV for the American market. And the Tennessee plant is competing with Mexico for the job. Mexico already benefits from a low-tariff free trade pact with the European Union that the U.S. is only now negotiating. And a UAW victory would have been an additional incentive to go south of the Rio Grande. The union is blaming Tennessee politicians for raising this possibility, especially Republican Senator Bob Corker, former mayor of Chattanooga, who helped bring Volkswagen to the city and who said last week that he felt assured, he didn't say by whom, that the Tennessee plant would get the second production line if it rejected the union. The company disavowed that claim, but the union may use it as an excuse for defeat and to file an unfair labor practice complaint under the Wagner Act with the NLRB. And if you listen to this and other shows, you know the NLRB is practically a union-owned and run operation right now, the National Labor Relations Board. This isn't likely to fly in the merits. Mr. Corker may have been impolitic, but he didn't give up his right to free speech when he joined the Senate, and every public action by Volkswagen had favored the union. State legislators had said they might withhold future tax incentives if the UAW organized the plan, and Tennessee had reason to believe that a UAW success would hurt its ability to recruit other companies that would fear the union precedent. Don't believe those who say this means the end of the UAW. It has too many friends in high political places. As the 2009 auto bailouts proved, federal law is also stacked in favor of unions, and President Obama's NLRB is routinely stretching and breaking the law to make it even more so. But the fact that the unions must rely on brute government force shows how out of touch they are with modern economic reality. American manufacturing is making a modest comeback with the help of rising labor costs in China and the American energy revolution. But it could stage an even bigger revival without the threat that unions could once again make American production uncompetitive. The last thing the U.S. economy needs is to import European labor practices. In Chattanooga, and not for the first time, the workers are smarter than management. Today's Wall Street Journal. It is a huge victory for all those non-union automotive plants in the South, which is really the new Detroit, by the way. It's just scattered across the South. Corker actually does have a right to say that. The others have a right to say this could cost tax incentives. I can all but guarantee Volkswagen would have put that plant, that new line, in Mexico. This doesn't work in the 21st century. You cannot extract unreasonable wages for work that most people can be trained to do. It just doesn't work. And thank God the workers of Volkswagen were smarter than the management in this case. And no, the UAW isn't dead as long as it continues to have liberals who will try to keep it on life support. It's 10:48.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.